Hello and welcome to The World in 30 Minutes, the podcast on the events, policies and ideas that will shape the world from the European Council on Foreign Relations. My name is Mark Leonard. I'm Director of ECFR. And this week we're doing an emergency episode. On Saturday evening, Iran launched a major attack on Israeli territory with a combination of 300 drones and missiles. Israel's air defense seems to have intercepted most of these, and the airspace over Israel and Jordan has since been reopened. But the attack remains historically unprecedented and leaves the Middle East sliding to the edge of a regional war. What motivated Iran to attack? How will Israel respond? What role is the US playing? What does it mean for Europe? With me to answer these questions and many more, we have an all-star cast. Julian Barnes-Dacey is the head of ECFR's Middle East and North Africa program. He's joining me down the line from Barcelona, is that right? And joining us from Berlin, we have Hamid Reza Azizi, who is a visiting fellow at the Stiftung Wissenschaft und Politik, where he focuses on Iranian foreign policy and regional issues. Thank you very much for joining me. So, Julian, why don't you start with the basics? Can you explain what happened and what led us up to this moment?
Sure, Mark. Well, thanks for having us. It's Sunday morning now, so who knows what will happen in the hours that come after this. But essentially, overnight, as you say, there were about 300 drone and missile attacks, mostly from Iran, also some via Yemen and Iraq on Israel. 99% of them don't seem to have got through. The Israelis working with the Americans, the French, the Brits, a number of Arab states brought most of these missiles and drones down. The Iranian attack was a response to the Israeli attack on the Syrian consulate in Damascus on April 1st, I believe it was, in which they took out the Iranian diplomatic facility, quite an unprecedented step of their own. They killed a very senior IRGC general, and really comes on the back of a kind of an ongoing escalating series of Israeli attacks on Iranian figures in Lebanon and Syria facilities, and a sense that Iran, though it's been trying to avoid responding, trying to avoid being sucked into a regional war, almost felt compelled to respond on this occasion, given the sense that its deterrence capabilities posture was being fatally weakened by these ongoing series of attacks. Now, of course, the question now, I guess, that hangs out is, what does Iran's, in a sense, ineffective response overnight say? Will Israel respond now with new attacks on Iran? In a sense, does this put this escalatory cycle to bed for a few days, or actually are we on the verge now of something even more dangerous?
So, Hamid, we've heard since October the 7th, that Iran wants to avoid a regional escalation. And some people are saying that this retaliation was quite pro forma in a sense. I mean, very few of the missiles got through. It was very well broadcast and advertised in advance. Is that right? Or is it just that it failed and that this was an attempt to try and push back on Israel's attacks on Iranian officials, which was designed to deter Israel from carrying on down that path?
Hi, thank you for having me on this podcast. Actually, I do believe that the argument that Iran doesn't want a war, especially the one that would be region wide and would bring the United States in, still holds. And even if you look at the statements coming from the Iranian side, they basically still emphasize on the retaliatory aspect of this attack. So the first statement that came when the drones were still on the air was that on our side this is done, and so we are not going to take any further measures, but we are going to respond to Israel. The thing is that, and this is something that have been, I can see, confusing to many, in the sense that, if Iran didn't want a war, why would they attack Israel from their own territory? So if you follow the narrative on the Iranian side, basically, They speak about what happened in Damascus, actually, in the Iranian consulate. They see it not just an isolated incident, as Julian also mentioned. They see a trend in which, especially since October 7, Israel has basically escalated the level of its response, in the sense that before the war, Israel would, in most of the cases at least, you know, try to avoid human losses on the Iranian side. That equation changed by killing Ghazi Mousavi, and then this time basically targeting a diplomatic compound in a third country was seen as a declaration of war. So the argument, to put it in a nutshell, on the Iranian side has been that it would be better to do something in retaliation while Israel is still kind of struggling with the war in Gaza, while it still cannot, you know, mobilize the whole of its resources against us, and while the United States also doesn't want a war to happen. So showing a message that would actually be strong enough in their own perspective, of course, from their own perspective, to deter Israel at this time would be better, because otherwise we would anyway have a war after the end of the conflict in Gaza, when Israel will feel strong enough to go on one side for other members of the so-called axis of resistance, one by one. The first one probably being Hezbollah, and also probably escalating in the sense that even they would target officials or some targets inside the Iranian territory. So that's the kind of logic that brought us to where we are.
So, Julian, should we talk a bit about the Israeli angle? So, obviously, from an Israeli perspective, they would say that what they've been doing was not something that they started. That the 7th of October marked a very clear escalation of persistent attacks from Iranian proxies. From Hezbollah over many, many years, and that Iran had been supplying all sorts of missiles and shells to their proxies, which had been raining down on Israeli territory for a long time. But how do you think they will now respond to what is obviously something which is unprecedented, which is a direct attack rather than something through proxies?
Sure. So no, absolutely, you're correct in the sense that your starting date on this determines kind of how you see culpability and who started first and who's leading the escalation here. I think what is clear is that since October 7th, the Iranians have been working quite hard to keep things in check. They don't want to get dragged into a war, and they and their proxies have kind of been working by certain rules of the game, as they would see it, to not tip things over the edge. And I think kind of Israel has been the one that's been assassinating figures in Beirut and Damascus, and obviously the embassy attack is quite unprecedented. So pushing things kind of forward and forward. Where we go next is obviously hugely uncertain. President Biden came out very quickly after the attacks, telling the Israelis, look, you've got to win here, take it, and let's end the cycle. The Iranians achieved nothing. You took down all their missiles, despite the fact of having strategically knocked out the IRGC general in Damascus. You don't need to respond. You don't need to go further, because as Hamid said, a direct attack on Iran itself could propel an even stronger Iranian response and drag the whole region into war. I guess that's one rational take to look at it from. There's another take, I think, which many in Israel have at the moment, which is actually that Iran is on the back foot here. Iran has repeatedly shown itself unable to respond to these series of attacks. Israel has kept pushing things, and the Iranians haven't been able to do something significant. And even last night, 300 attacks, nothing went through. The West has unified, the Arab world has unified behind the Israelis. Why not continue to take the fight to Iran? This is something that many in Israel have been wanting to do for a long time. Iran seems to be in a weakened position. They don't want war. They're hesitant. So I think there are likely to be some in Israel who see the opportunity to strike harder against Iran now. And this may be direct attacks in Iran itself. It might be going after Hezbollah, as many want to do in Lebanon. Obviously, I think it's not so simple, and the risks are quite acute. Iran did not want to provoke a war now. And as Hamid said, it messaged very clearly to that intent before and during the attacks. Israeli attacks on Iran itself would be a different equation. And I think then we move into kind of existential territory for the Iranians. You're likely to see a much more intense and overwhelming attempt by the Iranians to respond at that point. And I think then the risk is that you also draw American troops into the line of fire in Iraq and Syria. Things get a lot hotter across the region. So, you know, do the Israelis take this win and bank it as Biden wants them to try and stabilize the region? Or do they keep pushing? In which case, I think the dangers are pretty acute in terms of where this goes next.
So, Hamid, you've been following the Iranian narratives around this and their response. What do they expect to happen next? Which of the two scenarios that Julian laid out seems to be the one that the Iranian regime is expecting?
I think they are, I mean, at least they seem to be prepared for both scenarios. Of course, they've been working to prevent the second one. And let me go back a little bit to a few days prior to the attack. You know, the way that Iran was signaling its unwillingness to even show a response at this extent, because I think the statement that came from the Iranian representation at the UN a few days ago was quite significant, in which they said something like, the UN Security Council had condemned the attack against the consulate, there might be no need for an Iranian response. But the thing is that they had already set the bar too high that they couldn't back off from the threats. And they had tried everything other than an attack from their territory before, and they had failed. You know, using proxies wouldn't work. But, you know, the way that I see it, and the way it is also depicted in the Iranian media, is that, you know, this was actually a measured response in their own sense. And they say, for example, that Hezbollah, was not involved as extensively as it could. The other parts of the axis of resistance as well, like the Houthis, etc. And the other thing that they are emphasizing is that it was a proportionate response because, the main target where the missiles did go through was the Israeli airbase from which this is what they claim, at least. The Israeli fighter jets, went to bomb the Iranian consulate. So they are doing all these sort of things, and through their statements, they are basically trying, I think, to leave some space open for the other side to just stop where they are. But at the same time, and this is, I think, the more dangerous part of the Iranian calculation, seems they are really trying, and they seem prepared to do whatever they can to go back to the equations pre-April 1, or even to do something that would put them in a stronger position. Because just a couple hours ago, General Salami, chief commander of the IRGC, said, now we have a new equation. If Israel attacks us anywhere, we will attack Israel from our own territory. So this is very significant, I think. And this means that the risk is going to remain there. That's what I can say. I do agree with the statement that, at the end of the day, especially if, the response by the international community goes beyond the mere, condemnation and the call for restraint, Iran will find itself in a more difficult situation. But I think they also have, been trying to signal some options that they may resort to. For example, and this is another significant development just in the past 24 hours, they are once again speaking about targeting American bases all over in the region and not just in Iraq and Syria. This is very significant because since October 7, there was no talk of there was no such talk, for the simple reason that Iran valued its rapprochement with Arab states more than, the confrontation with the United States. Now, it seems that actually, as far as Iran is concerned, the confrontation is already, you know, going toward the thresholds of being of becoming existential. So that's one of the things. And also, I think the weaponization of nuclear program, at least from what we can hear and see from unofficial channels, that's also part of what they see as at least a deterrent against the United States. So that's the sort of very precarious situation that we are witnessing right now.
And Hamid, what do you make of the fact that Arab states shot down a lot of these missiles? The Jordanians, for example, shot a lot of missiles down which were going over their airspace. Is that evidence that the rapprochement between Iran and a lot of the Arab states might be being threatened now?
I think it's always because, you know, it was already in the in the very nascent stages, right, when the war in Gaza happened. Iran, for the simple reason that they saw the axis of resistance as, you know, increasingly getting the upper hand in this new equation, was sort of, I would say, it would tolerate in their own sense the kind of relationships, that the contacts that were still ongoing between Arab states and Israel. But I think that messages, you know, going towards the direction of the Arab states from last night is getting quite serious. And depending on the Israeli response and the Arab positioning in that regard, it may be kind of even more dangerous. But one point I would say regarding Jordan, I think, you know, I had heard, you know, some at least rumors that, you know, talks for normalization between Iran and Jordan was also ongoing. But I think, you know, at some stage, especially in these past weeks, I think Iran just gave up on its hopes for the normalization. And why I'm saying this, because I started seeing reports on basically especially the so-called Iraqi resistance, the umbrella group of militias in Iraq, which is supported by Iran, planning to support their sort of quote-unquote brothers in the Jordanian resistance, you know. So that was, I think, a sort of a message to Jordan that we do have the potential to destabilize the country from within. So Jordan is still a different story, I think, but overall, I think.
Can I just add a couple of things there, which I think are interesting? I mean, one, look, the Iranians signaled very early on that these attacks were going on, and you had this bizarre scenario of kind of videos of the drones being launched from Iran kind of 5 hours before they reached Israel. My sense is Israel probably the Iranians pretty much expected these drones to be shot down. It was so kind of self-apparent what was happening. I think they probably welcomed them being shot down because they didn't want to provoke a wider war. So I'm not sure they're really going to go after the Arab states for, in a sense, responding as was actually necessary to keep things in check as the Iranians wanted it. Just secondly, I'm not so sure how much this is about the Arab states siding with Israel here. I mean, the Arab aim here is to prevent regional escalation. And obviously, if any of these missiles got through and hit Israeli civilians or whatever, things would have quickly kind of spiraled out of control. So I think there was very much a kind of self-interest from the Arab states to make sure that these missiles and drones didn't cause casualties. And if that meant bring them down, so be it, especially as they were flying over their territory, rather than necessarily kind of us seeing this as the Arab states strategically lining up with Israel against Iran here. I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to continue talking to Iran. I think their fundamental goal here is to keep things stable and prevent this wider war that we all want to avoid.
Can we stick with Israel for a bit longer? I mean, one of the questions here is how this intersects with Israeli politics. And, you know, I think it's quite clear that the US definitely doesn't want a regional war. Europeans don't want a regional war. Arab states don't seem to want a regional war. And Iran has been telling us in various different ways they didn't want a regional war, though, you know, it has escalated by attacking Israel directly. So even if it's doing it in a kind of cautious way. The one actor that people are less clear about is Benjamin Netanyahu, because obviously if the conflict in Gaza ends, there will be all sorts of questions raised about his own political future. And this is create questions in people's minds about exactly how he wants to to play things. There have been some speculation in the media, various different people talking to American press, that the White House or the at least the Biden administration is worried that Netanyahu is trying to suck them into a kind of regional conflict. What's your kind of reading of the calculus for Netanyahu?
If that's directed at me, Mark, I'd say a couple of things. I mean, obviously, we don't know. If we're being honest, no one knows kind of how Netanyahu is maneuvering here. Based on some of my conversations and my sense of the situation, I don't think the Israelis are looking for a war just yet. I think that actually what's driving them here is more of a sense that the Iranians are not going to respond. They're on the back foot. They can push the envelope, push the line more than they've done in the past. And I think the sense of the Damascus attack was actually that the Iranians wouldn't respond more forcefully. I'm not sure how the read in Israel is today, this morning, about whether this Iranian response was a forceful one or whether it was just a symbolic one. So my sense is that for the moment, they haven't been angling for an all-out war. I think Bibi is quite cautious. I think he knows ultimately that kind of a war on all fronts is just going to kind of compound the problem that he's facing. Whether that equation changes as the Gaza situation potentially moves down a layer is, I think, an unknown. Obviously, there's a strong contingency within the Israeli security establishment who believe that they need a more forceful offensive against Hezbollah to take away the threat from Israel's northern border. Bibi's political calculations and talk of you know, needing a war to stay in power. I think there's obviously a sense that now is a moment to launch a war if you want to compel the Americans to be behind you, and that may no longer be the case down the line a bit. So all of these things could come into play. I don't quite know which way it runs, but clearly they're prepared to push things out further. They see the threat as being more acute. They're prepared to take the fight to Iran in a bigger way than they've ever had before. I think it's going to be an indirect result of it's going to be an unintended result of that sparks a major war, rather than the Israelis saying, no, come on, bring it on. We want war here and now.
And Julie, just before we go back to the Iranian side, what do you make of the way that allies or you know, Western powers are playing this? Because on the one hand, you know, that people have been very quick to condemn Iran and to express their solidarity with Israel. But at the same time, you know, there is a general fear of a kind of wider regional escalation and a deepening of the war. And it's been a very tricky balancing act since the 7th of October, where people want to show their solidarity with Israel's right to exist and its ability to defend itself. But at the same time, they're pretty worried about Netanyahu and the way that he's fighting the war and what his actual agenda is. But here, there does seem to have been a kind of a big sort of shift, at least rhetorically, in that, you know, it's a very people are urging restraint and a lack of escalation, but they've clearly kind of come in on the Israeli side.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the Americans and the French and the Brits actively working to help the Israelis respond to this situation. But I would read it a bit like the Arab states. I mean, their desire is to prevent a big regional war, and they know that if Iran succeeds in these attacks, there's no way around that. So I think they are working extremely hard to both help Israel defend itself, prevent these missiles or drones going through, and at the same time, communicating, talking to the Iranians very hard, using the Arab states to communicate to the Iranians. And obviously, there's a lot more Western pressure on Israel these days to not launch a wider war. I mean, Biden came out saying to Netanyahu, we're not going to back you if you now attack Iran. We won't have your back there. We'll back you defensively. We're not going to back you offensively. I think that's the right message. I think the Europeans are and should be communicating the same message. And they're also, they're not doing enough on this front, but they're also, I think, making a bigger effort to push the Israelis to get a ceasefire in Gaza, because obviously that's ground zero for everything that's happening in the region. And there's a sense that until you get a ceasefire there, all these sparks in the region are going to keep going off and things won't be containable. So you've seen a kind of pivot over the last couple of months, or maybe last month, where Western states have put a lot more pressure, have been much more critical in terms of how Israel is waging the Gaza campaign in an attempt to end that, to move towards some kind of negotiations and suck the life out of the regional kind of escalatory cycle. But everyone is very worried. They back Israel, but they don't like where it's going. We find ourselves now in this dilemma.
So, Hamid, do you know, if we take what Julian said, I think what he's describing is something which was very clear before this attack, that public opinion and political opinion in the West was shifting against Israel. There was a lot of focus on the dangers of famine in Gaza, a lot of pressure on and Israel was in a tight spot. Has Iran actually, accidentally helped it out of its spot and actually now created a debate about Iranian aggression and its proxies and its plans across the region and creating a lot more solidarity with Israel at precisely the moment when Israel found itself in a much harder situation?
I don't think it was accidental. I mean, they basically knew the repercussions in the sense that, it would most probably put Israel out of international spotlight. But, in this case also, we need to look at things maybe from the perspective of the Iranian leaders, which is not always easy, of course, but we can at least try. So based on the narrative, again, as far as I can follow, they really reached to a point where thinking that, of course, this is important. I mean, this is unprecedented. The way that the international community is supporting the Palestinians against Israel. And this was something that, the most latest example of this was Khamenei's speech last week, in which he said, this was an unprecedented, nobody would expect, people to come to the streets in France, in UK, etc., in support of Palestine. But that's the key word here. He speaks about people, not the government, from the viewpoint of the Iranian leaders, actually, all these kind of changing international atmosphere has nothing to do, has basically not been successful in really pushing the Arab states toward a substantial reconsideration of their ties or the Muslim states in general with Israel. You can see every other day some reports about how Turkey, for example, is doing trade with Israel despite the war. And, this happens against the backdrop of basically Iran and Turkey being in good terms in different areas. So in that sense, I think the calculation on the Iranian side has been that, what we need actually is the Muslim people, the public opinion in the Arab world, which actually is going to support us when we do this attack. And, especially in the context of the ongoing war in Gaza, while we are taking our own revenge or while we are doing our own retaliation, it may also seem to the Arab streets as Iran being the only true supporter of Palestinian. And this is, again, something that has been one of the main lines of argument since the strikes last night. They are publishing, the official, the state media. They are publishing a variety of, videos from the Palestinian territories, from, other parts of the region to show that, actually people are supporting this. So it was a matter of basically choosing maybe between that sort of international pushes for ceasefire and Iran's own image being somehow elevated even among the Arab world. And at the end of the day, of course, when you have no other choice, when you see yourselves as having no other choice but to retaliate, so you can do it in a way that would also at least get you some public opinion support. So that's the sort of calculation as far as...
Okay, so we're coming to the end of our time here. Julian, can I just ask you one last question, which is about Europe? Are there any opportunities for Europeans to get involved in trying to de-escalate things to try and stop this becoming an even deadlier regional conflagration?
Well, I mean, I think the Europeans have good channels of communication, and they're working hard with the Arab states. They're talking to the Iranians themselves. I mean, something that the Americans aren't doing directly. Hopefully, they're messaging with Israel, with Biden, that Israel should not and will be not be backed if it retaliates further. So I think that it has different kind of levers of communication. Does it have kind of assets on the table in a sense in the region? Not so much. As I said before, I think that the second element, there is a regional element in terms of pressing all sides to not continue the fight. There's localized mediation efforts in Lebanon to prevent an Hezbollah-Israel flare-up. But as I say, I think kind of ground zero for this is Gaza. I do think there needs to be a bigger a united European push to get a ceasefire there. That, you know, it's a famine. It's a devastating situation. The strategic aims that Israel wanted to achieve don't seem to be achievable at this stage, and rather they seem to be making the situation worse in some way. So I think, you know, that's where more than anywhere the Europeans need to focus their attention. That is where everything is flowing out of. And I think until that situation is contained in a sustainable way, there are so many risks across the region of things going pop. And, you know, this may be about Iran, but there are plenty of other groups associated with Iran that don't come under their direct kind of absolute authority that could also spark things off. So you know, it's very hard to control what's happening right now across the region. And I do think that Gaza is the kind of point of focus to make a more strategic effort to roll this in now.
Okay, thanks. It's been a fascinating discussion. I think the kind of one line summary I'd take of what we've got is that you're both very worried about what's going on, but you think it is likely that this isn't going to become the beginning of a total regional war, which sucks in the US and other players into a kind of nightmare scenario. But it is possible that things will go wrong the longer there isn't a ceasefire. Thank you very much for joining us for this emergency podcast. If you enjoyed listening to us, please do subscribe to Future Issues on whatever platform you use to download this episode. And while you're there, it would be great if you could give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, because it will help bring other people to the podcast. But for now, from Julian, Hamid, and myself, Mark Leonard, it's goodbye. Research for this podcast is Anand Sundar, and the editor of this episode is Maria Farah Saratz.